this morning on a little bit of a journey. I call it the cross and three encounters. Encounter number one, Pontius Pilate. You guys know Pontius Pilate, right? I mean, you've heard the stories about him, you've read about him in the Gospels, but did you know that Pontius Pilate is actually talked about in non-biblical sources? Like, there are historical sources that talk about this person who is a real person in the real history of the world named Pontius Pilate. There are some stories that are told about him. Actually, he was kind of a cruel leader. He was the governor of Judea, the region of the Jewish people, and he was very cruel to the Jewish people. One of the stories that's told about him is that Pontius Pilate came to the Jewish temple. And if you don't know, the Jewish people would bring their offerings to God. They'd bring sacrifices, but they would also bring financial offerings. And they brought their tithes and their offerings to God and put them in the temple treasury. And Pontius Pilate comes along, and he takes the offering of the people of God for himself. He takes it and he uses it to build an aqueduct for the Roman aqueduct, and he begins to do it, and he does this just for the purpose of trying to bait the Jewish people to come at him. You know, you ever seen somebody go, "Come at me, bro," right? It's kind of like that, like he's saying, "Come at me, bro." And so the Jewish people, they all gather around to come to Pontius Pilate. They're all in this big crowd and they're protesting, fist shaking. Come, we've seen this kind of stuff in our day and age, right? They're shaking their fists. They're yelling. They want justice. They want the money back for the treasury. It's not right to rob from God. What they didn't know is that it was all a setup. You think our world is cruel today. Pontius Pilate had intentionally baited the Jewish people into this moment. He had sent Roman soldiers into the crowd dressed like Jewish men. They were dressed in the garb of a Jewish man. And they go into the crowd, and they all were bearing clubs underneath their garments. And he said, "When I give you the command, break out your clubs and start to bludgeon people." So all the Jewish people are shouting and they're cheering and they're trying to get justice. And Pilate gives the command. Can you just picture it? All of these Roman soldiers whipping out their clubs. You're standing next to somebody. You have no clue that they're not a Jewish person like you, that they're not chanting just like you are. And they begin to just bludgeon people, like bludgeon them to the point of blood and brains. Everywhere. People die. There's crowd scatters. There's mad chaos. And Pilate, once again, has gotten away with terrifying the Jewish people. Over and over again, if you read the historical accounts outside of the biblical literature, you'll see that Pontius Pilate was a terrible man to the Jewish people. So here's the problem for you and me. This is not the picture that the Gospels paint of Pontius Pilate. As a matter of fact, if you were a skeptic, and many a skeptic has kind of came to this story with this view, they've looked at it and they've gone, "Look, I get it, but there is a Pontius Pilate in real history, and what your gospels say is the Pontius Pilate are missing what the historical account says, because it looks like your Pontius Pilate, well, he almost gets pushed around. Actually, instead of looking like someone who toys with the Jewish people at his pleasure, Pilate looks like somebody who's afraid of them." Can I just show you what I mean? John chapter 19. Jesus has been taken. He has come into, like Mike was talking about, Jesus has come in. People have laid down palm branches. They've laid down their coats. He's come in on a donkey. Everybody's saying, "Hosanna." But Jesus starts to just like go all out this whole week. He's preaching. He's coming against the religious authorities. And the whole crowd starts to turn towards him. He is taken that evening, and he spends all evening being tried. And he's taken, and Jesus is put on trial unfairly, and he gets brought before Pontius Pilate. And you know the story, right? He is completely and utterly silent. He's completely and utterly silent until Pontius finally says, "You know, I have the power to set you free or to kill you, don't you?" And Jesus says, "You don't have any power except what's been given to you from above." Jesus says, "Whoever gave me over to you is greater, he's worse off than you because of the sin that he's committed." And then John chapter 19, verse 12 tells us this. Listen, we're going to put it up on the screen. This is what it says. "From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. But the Jewish leaders kept shouting, 'If you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar.' And I'm telling you, from this point on, Pilate acts from this point on like his hands are tied. What's the deal? To be honest, this doesn't match up with who he is in these outside historical accounts, right? Because what we know of Pontius Pilate from outside historical accounts is not a man who feels like his hands are tied by the Jewish leaders, but a man who feels like he can do whatever he wants to the Jewish leaders. What in the world is the deal? What's going on here? It doesn't feel like this biblical account is historical, except for one thing. Can I share? How many of you love history? Can I get a woo from you? All right, how many of you hate history? Can I get a woo from you? All right, I feel you. All right, now, I actually like history, but I get that some of you don't. So I'm going to try to give you the story in Kent's like 3-minute history lesson, all right? So we'll try to do this some real justice, because there's one thing that will change the course of how you read this story in the middle of all of history. See, there is this guy named Sejanus. Everybody say Sejanus with me. 1, 2, 3. Sejanus. All right, that's good. We're going to call him SJ, all right, because SJ is way easier to pronounce and remember. SJ works for a guy named Tiberius. Everybody say Tiberius. Tiberius. Yes, perfect. All right. Tiberius you may have heard of. He was the emperor of Rome. And Tiberius was kind of a neither here nor there. He's the emperor of Rome when Jesus was alive, towards the end of Jesus' life at least. And Tiberius was kind of like, he loved to just give his power away, it seemed like. SJ was his right-hand man, and Tiberius would say to SJ, hey, there's this land that I need conquered, or I need somebody to go over and kind of get things in order, and they would send SJ to that place. David Birchfield is that for our church. Like, I'm like, David, I don't know what to do. And he's like, I got it. Don't worry about it, Kent, right? SJ would go and he would take care of things. He was just this incredible leader. And so SJ is taking over all these things. And finally, Tiberius looks at it. The emperor looks and he goes, SJ has got this. What if I retire? How many of you are just longing for retirement? You're like, oh, yeah, woo, all right. So how many of you are in retirement? Give me a woo, woo. All right. He's longing for retirement as the emperor. And so Tiberius retires to this island called Capri, and it is kind of Tiberius's island of fun and joy, although it's a terrible place. It's actually, I won't say much more than this because I don't know if there's children out there, but it was kind of, he would have a bunch of boy toys, if I could say it that way. And he did terrible, terrible things on this island. And Tiberius leaves Rome, and he goes to Capri, and he never comes back, and he leaves SJ in charge of everything. If you think our political leaders are something to be marveled at by how devious they are and all the things that they can get away with, it has nothing. They have nothing on the Roman Empire. SJ goes out and he begins to take generals who are loyal to the emperor, and he replaces them with generals who will be loyal to him. He begins to put governors in different places, like a guy named Pontius Pilate. SJ starts to put all these people in place, and he starts to woo the Senate of Rome, and then SJ begins to control all the messaging that goes to the emperor on Capri, and he only lets messages get through that he wants to get through, except one slips through, and it slips through to Tiberius, that SJ is trying to take the Roman throne from him. Tiberius is smart. He is just as devious when it comes to politics. So he doesn't move fast. He begins to put things in order. And his kind of final pin in his whole plan is that he sends this letter to Rome. In the letter, he's building up for SJ, this guy named Sejanus. He's building up for him that he is going to become a co-regent. He thinks that means that he's going to become co-emperor with Tiberius, that he will be able to reign like Tiberius does. Tiberius says to SJ, go to the Senate, Roman Senate, and have somebody read this letter. They take the letter, and it's this really long, rambling letter that they read in the Senate. What SJ doesn't know is that while the letter's being read, Tiberius has sent out envoys to the different people around Rome, and he's told them that SJ has been trying to create this coup and take over the Roman emperorship. And so all of these people gather around the Roman Senate, and they get to the very end of the letter, and instead of it saying, spelling out how SJ is to become the co-regent with Tiberius, it spells out all of SJ's treason and how he has been trying to steal the throne from Tiberius. And in that moment, all of the people who've been gathered outside start to shout for SJ's head, for his death. And so the Roman Senate stands up, and in that moment, they grab Sejanus, and they take him out. And they kill him. They immediately go and they find his family and they kill his family. And then Tiberius begins to go after anybody who is loyal to Sejanus and not to him. So can I take you back to the biblical story for a minute? Remember how Pilate, who, remember, he is put in position by Sejanus. He has been made the governor of Judea. Actually, one of the reasons, one of the things that helps us understand this is Sejanus, SJ, he hated the Jewish people. He thought they should be wiped out. Probably, if he had become emperor, they would have been wiped out as a people. And so he was okay with cruelty. This is why, under Pontius Pilate's watch, it was okay for him to be cruel to all of these Jewish people, to bait them and then beat them. So why does Pilate, who sees nothing wrong with Jesus, why does he allow the Jewish leaders to control him? Can I tell you why? Can I read for you again what they say to him? They come to him. Pilate has Jesus. He wants to let him go. The people won't let him. And they say this, if you let this man go, remember, you are no friend of who? You are no friend of who? Caesar. You are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king, they oppose Caesar. See, actually, friend of Caesar is actually a technical term for the nobility. It was a term that the nobility would use when they to show that they were loyal to the emperor. And these Jewish leaders are real sharp. They know what they're doing. And they're saying to Pontius Pilate, in the middle of this historical context, that Pontius Pilate, if you let Jesus live, if you don't put him on a cross and kill him, if you don't do it, then you are no friend of Caesar's. You are not loyal to the crown. You don't know this, but there were dozens of people like Pontius Pilate who SJ had put into political power that their heads rolled. They were killed by Tiberius because of their loyalty to Sejanus. And so in this moment, Pilate is put in this position where Pilate ends up putting Jesus to death. Why? To hold on to his political position. He puts Jesus to death because he's afraid the word will get back to the emperor that he is no friend of Caesar's. And if he's found to be no friend of Caesar, then he will die. And so the question for him is, why in the world would I sacrifice my life for one man? Puts Jesus to death because he's not willing to sacrifice anything for this man. Encounter number two, the thief on the cross. Jesus has been tried now. It has been all evening for him. He prayed, he wept. His prayer time was so dark that and so intense that literally he started to have drops of blood like sweat coming through his skin. When they took him, there's soldiers that came up. Peter takes a sword, cuts off the ear of one of the high priest's servants. Jesus heals this guy. In the middle of him being captured, he heals this man. And he, from that point on, he's at their pleasure. They take him, they throw him from place to place. He's not allowed to sleep. Anytime that he starts to get drowsy, they begin to become physically violent with him. They whip him until his back is like raw hamburger. They take his body, they put a robe, they do a mock coronation as a Roman. This is what they would do for a Roman emperor, and they're mocking him. They're making fun of him. They put a purple robe on him. The purple starting to fill up with the scarlet of his blood. The thorns that they put in a crown on his head, they beat it with a rod and a staff. They blindfold him at one point. Did you know they did this? They blindfold him and they punch him in the face over and over and over again. And they say, prophesy to us. Who hit you? You know this kind of cruelty, right? You've seen it. They are cruel. They are wicked. And they take it to the nth degree. Finally, he is ordered to be crucified. They tell him to carry his own cross, but he's so weak midway through it, he stumbles and he falls and he can't get back up. And so they grab a man out of the crowd and they make him carry the cross for Jesus. He's taken to that place, the place of the skull, Golgotha. And they take nails. And you know, they weren't sharp, nice nails. They were thick, rusty, old, used nails. I start to put them through his hand. I've often thought about those nails going through his hands, his wrists. I've thought about the roughness of them and the ligaments being torn and the muscles being ripped apart and the blood vessels breaking. Have you ever thought about how the bones would have been displaced as the nail passed through and the excruciating pain, the thud of the hammer and the vibration being sent through your whole body, almost to the point of passing out? They take him and they put the cross up and drop it into its place. And he is crucified there between two thieves on his left and his right. And this is the story of what happened. One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. Now, this guy isn't alone. Everybody has been hurling insults at him. Aren't you the Messiah? Aren't you the one that God was supposed to send to save us? Save yourself and us if you're really him. But the other criminal rebuked him. Don't you fear God, he said. Since you are under the same sentence, we are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve. But this man, he's done nothing wrong. And then he said to Jesus, I love this. Jesus has been quiet almost the entire time on the cross. He said a few things, but he's just been deafeningly quiet. The man turns to Jesus in the middle of all of this mocking, all of this insult, all of this rebuttal. He says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. I love it. Jesus answered him, truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise. Some of you, if you don't know the story very well, you don't know. This is this guy's last few moments. In just a little bit, Jesus will breathe his last. The leaders of the religious elite, they will come and they'll say, hey, tomorrow's the Sabbath. As Jewish people, we're not supposed to work on the Sabbath. And so they will tell them, we need you to finish the deed, Romans. Kill them so we can take them down and bury them today and deal with it before it's the Sabbath. And so they'll go to the thieves on the cross, this guy who just turned to Jesus, and they will break his leg so that he can't stand. Do you know why that's important? Doctors have done some research on how a person actually dies when they die on a cross. And what they found was, because nobody really knew, did you die because of the nails in your side? Did you die because they maybe pierced your side to see if you had died? What caused you to die? Was it just the exposure to the elements? And what this doctor found from all this research was that when somebody was hung by their hands like this and their legs were bent and their feet were nailed together like that, what they found was that how you actually died, you may have heard this, is that you die from the weight of your body pressing down on your lungs and you're unable to breathe. And the only way you can take a breath is to push up against the nails and to pull up against the nails in your hands and to go, so when they break your legs, you hang there and your lungs begin to get on fire and you are trying to take a breath with all that you have in you, but you can't pull. You're ripping your hands and wrists apart trying to get a breath, but your muscles have nothing left in them and you go, and so there's nothing left. It is this guy's last moment. And what I love about it is in the final moments, he turns to Jesus. And Jesus turns towards him. I love that. That in this moment, on the cross, this moment of moments, he is about to die. He has lived a terrible, horrible life. And in that moment, he turns to Jesus. And I love it. Jesus breaks the silence for this man and he utters the most glorious words today. Today, in just a few moments, you will be with me in paradise. He gives this man hope in the most hopeless of situations. In the final moment, he turns to Jesus and Jesus turns to him. Listen, Pilate, you remember old Pilate? Pilate tried to save his life. The thief turned at the last moment of his life. And it was in that moment that he was set free. He was set free. Encounter number three, the centurion soldier. From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over the land. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of those standing there heard this. They said, he's calling Elijah. They mishear him. They mishear Eli, Eli, for Elias, Elias, which is how the Jewish people pronounced Elijah's name. Immediately, one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar. He put it on a staff, and he offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him. And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit at that moment. At that moment. The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tomb after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified. And they exclaimed, surely he was the Son of God. The centurion, he would have been a tough man, a calloused man. He, for him, this moment was a moment he had lived 100 times over. For him, he was a butcher working in a butcher shop. He was the guy that took the meat and nailed the meat to the wood and then ripped the meat off the wood after it had died and placed it somewhere for somebody to take it away. That was his job. He made jokes about it. He was calloused. He was unburdened by this laborer. You know what it's like to grow to where you're calloused by a job, don't you? Where you no longer see the pain or hurt around you? Except for this one. See, this one was different. Jesus died like no other person has died. He took it on the chin, right? He just took it on the chin. He suffered incredible ridicule. They mock him and make fun of him while he's on the cross dying. And then he had asked for their forgiveness. I wish I could have been there in that moment when that soldier in there rolling dice for Jesus' clothes, and they hear him say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. He had asked for our forgiveness. And then it happened. The earth and the sky began to protest. The sky went dark. The earth began to shake and rip open. There was no denying that this one was different. And it is in this moment that this man utters the most treasonous words he possibly could have uttered. Surely he was the Son of God. Treasonous, Kent? I don't get it. Do you know who the Romans called the Son of God? The Caesar, the Emperor of Rome, right? It is in this moment that this man puts his entire profession and life on the line. I wondered if later if he was like, oh man, I wonder if anybody heard me say that. I mean, he puts his life on the line. Not only did they call them the sons of God, the emperors, but they also thought of emperors as God on earth. And I'm telling you, this man risked everything to proclaim Jesus as God on earth. He looked at it and he said, this is God. This man risked everything to proclaim Jesus after witnessing the cross. He sees it, right? He sees the cross. And he knows. He's just been in God's presence. But Pilate wasn't willing to risk anything. And because of it, his actions led to the cross. The centurion, the third encounter, he risked everything. Pilate won't risk nothing. He won't risk anything. Everything, nothing. I really have a fourth encounter for you today. See, if I could just kind of get devotional with you guys for a moment. As I thought about bringing you to the cross, I thought so many of us have been there before. But I wonder if you've ever been to the cross and looked into the cross and looked at yourself and looked to see what reflects back at you from the cross. And so the fourth encounter today of the cross, I want to be your encounter with the cross. I've wondered if when you encounter the cross, I wonder if, are you going to continue to try? I just wonder, are you going to continue to try and hold on to your life like Pontius Pilate did? To not be willing to give up, to not be willing to put yourself in a position of risk for him. Like, I get, Jesus, that you did what you did, and yeah, it's great that you did all that, but man, I don't know if I'm willing to really identify with it and to risk it. Wash your hands of all the blood that was shed. Are you going to walk up to the cross, and are you going to look at yourself in the mirror of the cross, and are you just going to walk away? Or maybe for you, you've always thought that it was too late for you. And you'll walk up to the cross, and you're gonna think of the thief on the cross, and you're gonna go, I get what it's like to feel like I'm at the end of my rope. I'm actually at church today, but I didn't really know why. My wife asked me, and I just said yes, and it's felt dumb ever since I got in the car to come, but I came. Maybe you're gonna walk up to the cross, and you're gonna look at it, and you're gonna just turn to Jesus and let him turn to you. What a beautiful thing. To find hope in him, to find that freedom and that life in him, to let him set you free from the burdens and the chains of all of the sin of your life, all the ways that you've been walking away from him. Or maybe some of you, you'll just look at it again and realize the incredible enormity of it all. And again, you'll offer yourself to him no matter what it costs you. Because when you look deep into the cross, when you look deep into it, when you actually get to it, it's hard to look at it and walk away the same. There were three different people that experienced the exact same thing, and three different people with three different entirely stories to tell. What will be the fourth? What will be your story? This morning, I want to offer this time of invitation. If you come to church here very often, you know we have an invitation song. Normally people come up here, but I want to offer something totally different. It's similar to what we did last week, but different. I want to offer for you during the song for you to get up from your seat, to walk over to the cross, get as close to it as you want, stay as far back as you want. You can walk up and touch it. And my son during first service, Simon, he walked up and he touched it and he felt how rough it was. And he said, Dad, when he breathed, I bet he got splinters in his back. And I was like, yeah, buddy, it would have been terrible, huh? I don't know what you need to do, but this morning, I wanted to offer this time for you. It's okay for you to even just stay where you're at. Don't feel guilty about not going up there, but I want to offer for you to look yourself in the reflection of the cross and to see what your encounter will bring. My hope is that you will be willing to lose everything for that, because he lost everything so that he could give you everything through that. It's where life is really found. I'll close with this. I had a buddy who told a story about his grandpa. I loved the story. They were in a small little church, and in that little church, they would do communion devotions. The elders would get up and do one. And he said, you know, I never heard my grandpa get up and talk about communion and the death of Jesus without my grandfather's eyes just filling with tears as he told the story. I'll never forget my friend saying, I just hope that when I'm old, that I'll never grow tired of hearing the story of the cross. That I'll never let it get to the point where it's just old news for me. Where it will pierce me that he was pierced for me. That it will break me that he was broken for me. And that when I come to him, I'll be willing to lay my life down for him. This morning, I don't know what you've walked into this room with. Could I just ask you to just leave that in your chair and come up to the cross and walk away with him? This is your time. I want to pray, and then I want to invite you at the end of this prayer for you to come forward, walk up to the cross. We'll be singing a song, and for you to just engage with him. You guys bow with me in prayer. Abba, Father, I pray for anybody in here today who has been walking away from the cross. They've been walking, maybe it's for intellectual reasons, maybe it's for like they've gotten caught and trapped in sin, or they felt like you let them down some way. I don't know what it is, but God, I pray that today they would look at the cross and see that you've never let them down. That intellectually, you gave everything to come after them. That you died because of the sin that they were caught in, and you came to give them freedom and hope. And that Jesus, today we would look straight at the cross. We would feel the roughness and the ruggedness of it, and we would recognize how great of a sacrifice it was that you gave for us. And that we would trust you and walk with you today. I need you, Jesus. And so today I just leave it all at the cross, and I want to walk with you. If you have the guts to come up here and just spend some time in front of the cross, I invite you to come up. This is your time during this next song.